Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I'm joined today by Anthony Amico. We are recording now, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, 9 o'clock Central Time, right as the Scott Fishbowl kicks off. You know, we figured we'd talk a little bit of strategy. Probably the number one overall pick is going to be gone in some of ours. And then I wanted to talk, because we didn't really get into this on the show I did with Pat and Pete, but about like specific stacks to gun for. Like we talked kind of about the theory of stacking and why it's so important in this specific format. But I think it is the number one most important thing that you should be going into your draft thinking about. So first off, Anthony, you had the number one overall pick. Who'd you take?
Well, you know, Davis, life is good. You know, you get to wake up on a Monday morning and just snap call on Patrick Mahomes. So that's who I took. And I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, I don't think that – I think that, like, the discourse around the first pick has been pretty good. Like, most people are just taking McCaffrey, which is obviously fine. I think that those two guys are probably in a tier of their own. But, you know, ultimately for me – besides the fact that like just owning Mahomes is tons of fun, I kind of was thinking about this on like a weekly basis, and I think that like while I think that those two players will probably score a similar amount of points, I might even have McCaffrey projected for a few more because he's just insane. But the range of outcomes in a given week at that position, I think, is actually wider at quarterback than at running back, because at running back, like the worst thing that can happen is you like have to start a guy that gives you zero, right? But like in Scott Fishbowl with these settings, like there's players that you're going to feel like decent about putting in your lineup at quarterback that are going to give you negative points, you know, because they're going to complete, you know, 50% of their passes or not throw a touchdown or throw a pick six or something like that. So you know, 30 from Mahomes is actually, I think, more valuable than it would be from McCaffrey. And, you know, I think my kind of overall,
because you think there are going to be so many guys getting negative points on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Like I just think that there's going to be people who are going late round quarterback, or maybe a quarterback gets hurt and they have to pick up a guy, but like those replacement level players actually might be like a net negative than, you know, being something useful.
Oh, I mean, I think there's no doubt about it that is going to end up being a net negative, right? That many of the teams that try and do late round quarterback are going to get like not even unlucky, but the teams that don't get lucky at late round quarterback are just going to have to eat a lot of bad performances. Like not even negative performances, but like the Nyheim Hines version of quarterback two, in which, you know, they're grinding out like 8-point games because they threw for 220 passing yards and two touchdowns. But they also threw, you know, 17 incomplete passes. They were sacked four times. And once you kind of get to there, like that's not even a performance worth starting in a super flex league. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And like his completion percentage has always been pretty good. And, you know, Mahomes, I think, has like that monster ceiling. Like his ceiling is probably even better than the year he won the MVP, just because of how many weapons they have and how good he is. So I think that, like, you know, for me as like a typically like a zero running back guy, you know, in a normal league, like you don't really have the opportunity to not take McCaffrey because, you know, he's a stud. Like there's right. No one you can really replace that production with. But in a super flex league with this kind of scoring, I actually think that Mahomes is kind of like the more anti-fragile option, just because he's, you know, he did get hurt last year, but I feel like he's less likely to get hurt by virtue of the position he plays. And he's still going to give you a pretty big weekly advantage.
So as we are drafting right now, I had my pre-draft selections in, and I just got Patrick Mahomes at the 104, which nice. Is the way I had him set up. I had McCaffrey, Mahomes, Lamar, Barkley set up as my 104. So my question to you now is, these teams that take Lamar in the first round, these teams that take Mahomes in the first round, I think Dak and Kyler are going to go in the first in some of these leagues. Specifically for Mahomes, do you take Tyreek Hill in the second round or Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the second round. I think with Dak, you can pretty much guarantee yourself one of Amari or Gallup. I think with Kyler, you can pretty much guarantee yourself Christian Kirk. You know, I think with Drew Brees, you can, we talked about this earlier off air, but you can pretty much guarantee yourself at least Jared Cook. It'll be overpriced, but at least you will have, you know, some meaningful representation of that. I think Mahomes, if you are going to stack him, you just, you got to commit to it. Like it can't be a, you know, you're not taking Mecole Hardman in the eighth. I think you got to take Tyreek, and I think maybe even Clyde Edwards-Helaire as well.
Yeah. I mean, if Hill comes back, I think I definitely would take him. I'm not sure that he does. And that's like the one issue that I had when I was considering the Mahomes 1-on-1 strat is just like, you know, Tyreek Hill could kind of go anywhere from like 10 to my pick. So it's, I don't know if it's like a high probability that he comes back, you know, and in which case I'm probably going to have to look at like, you know, Hardman or Sammy Watkins, like someone that I might not even look at as like a weekly start, but in like the Mahomes ceiling outcome probably would be a weekly start. So that's kind of how I'm viewing that. You know, if I don't get a good stacking partner, it is what it is, but I would like to, obviously. I'm not really sure about CEH just because I'm just kind of struggling to figure out exactly what, like, you know, 55 receptions from a running back is worth, like in terms of the correlation.
Well, here's the thing. Obviously, you and I and many people listening to this and many people in these drafts are starting this draft from a position they're very uncomfortable with, which is not taking a running back in the first round. You know, if you pick 1 through 5 in a fantasy draft this year, you're taking a running back. I think if you pick 10, 11, or 12, there's an extremely good chance that you're taking a running back with either, you know, that pick right there or the wraparound pick. You know, you're taking Josh Jacobs, you know, Joe Mixon, Kenyon Drake, Miles Sanders, these guys. The Scott Fishbowl is very different in that regards, where you might also not take a running back with your second round pick. Like you might be full on kind of accidentally going through as your running back strategy. And with the Mahomes team specifically, I mean, maybe 55 receptions of correlation isn't worth all that much over the course of the season. Obviously, the weeks where, you know, the weeks where Clyde Edwards-Helaire gets 6 receptions, that correlation is going to be, you know, immense. But also, I mean, the guy just fills a need that you're going to have. You are absolutely going to need to fill. You're going to need running back points. And he offers a little bit of correlation, but also, you know, fills that position of need.
Yeah, that's a good point. Part of me wonders if I'm going to go that route, if maybe it's just better to take like Damian later just because of the pretty wide difference in cost. I mean, I think that like the conversations around how that role is going to be split up in the backfield has been like all over the map. I definitely think that CEH is going to get most of the work, but, you know, obviously – he could get hurt,
yeah, or stuff happens.
Like, right. Like things happen. And I know you're a Damian guy, so,
so I might just go there. You know, I think the larger question here is, instead of being specific to Mahomes and to our teams, is just when you, in the first round, when you do not select a running back, right? So whether that means you're a team that took a quarterback, maybe you took Travis Kelce, maybe you took George Kittle, maybe you took Michael Thomas, maybe you took Devontae Adams. How are you looking to approach the rest of your draft to not just be getting dunked on that position every week? Because this format, while it does reward the top end of quarterback, it really rewards the high end tight ends. I mean, running backs who are getting 20 plus touches a week, they can get, it seems like they can almost get an infinity amount of points because of the first down bonuses, right? Like it just, the first down bonuses are so huge for starting running backs, like running backs getting loads of touches.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I think my general approach has been that, like, this is still a pretty good zero RB environment, just because, you know, people are still going to be taking running backs relatively early, you know, like in comparison to the receivers. So now I'm thinking, like, you know, I could get a stud quarterback. I could still probably load up on receivers and tight ends. Obviously, I think that's a good point. You want to take some tight ends, but you know, like we're still kind of like the old Rotoviz moniker, like we're still racing to win the flex, you know, and we have all these flex spots. So, you know, if I can fill all these spots with good receivers and good tight ends, you know, and then kind of just run pure at running back, like get the guy that gets hurt or get, I mean, because it's a tournament. So like, I feel like the extreme strategies kind of have more merit to them than they would in like a normal 12 team league.
Well, yeah, I mean, just drafting a very like ABC, like get my whole starting lineup filled out team. It's just, it's gonna, the chances of success are so much lower in this format, right? Because the goal, I mean, it's very nice to make the playoffs, but the goal should be to like win the whole thing. And 100%. And yeah, and to win the whole thing, you're gonna need so many different things to go in your favor that like just drafting the right players even is not enough. You need to draft the right players and also draft the right players in the right positions. And I think that obviously it's very hard to win without Christian McCaffrey because he scores so many points. And instead of trying to like replace Christian McCaffrey by like overdrafting Leonard Fournette and Le'Veon Bell and Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley, I think the right thing to do is just focus on the dudes who were like really locked in to positional advantages here. Like I might not take a running back until the fourth or fifth round. I mean, if Travis Kelce is there, it's so unlikely. And actually it's literally not even possible at the 209. There's no way he's going to be there, but George Kittle might be there at the 209. Yeah. And I would like maybe think about selecting George Kittle at the 209, even though there isn't a stack there, just because tight end scoring is at such a premium in this format.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned on the podcast with Kareen and Peter, you know, Jimmy G is actually probably a little more palatable in this format because
totally.
He's going to complete so many passes.
Yeah. And, you know, you can take, if you took Lamar in the first round, you know, you can take Mark Andrews, obviously. I think if you are listening to this and you did take Lamar Jackson in the first round, you should really be planning on thinking, when is Mark Andrews going to go? Do I need to take him in the third round? Can I wait to take him in the fourth round? I also think you should be targeting Hollywood Brown as well. Lamar actually is the easiest guy to stack because there's only two guys. There is not a third pass catcher to take. Those are really the only guys that you were interested in. I it would not surprise me if the winning team of this whole tournament, what is it, 1,200 teams, I think, maybe 1,400 teams?
1,440, I think.
Yeah, 1,440. It wouldn't surprise me if it's a team that was able to take Dak Prescott in the second round, Amari Cooper in the third round, and you know what, they just get the benefit of whoever that was in the first round, just because that stack is going to be so insanely correlated. Like all of Dak's best weeks were Amari healthy games, and then obviously Cooper is going to 100% correlate with Dak. And you know, Cooper is one of these guys who does have a load of first down upside, but like, is anyone ever going to really, really be that surprised if Cooper finishes number one overall this season? Like, he just stays healthy. Like, he can stay healthy for 16 games. He's never done it. He's never been healthy for 16 games before. If he does it in this offense, I am a firm believer that he can do it.
Yeah, kind of fulfilling the legend foretold, like, 8 years ago or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I think, like, the interesting thing about Dallas is that I like all their receivers. Like, I think you can kind of make an argument for all of them. Certainly Amari, like, at cost is at least reasonable. But, you know, Gallup and Lamb, I think, are severely underpriced for the targets that they could see. You know, I think, like, the case for Amari is like, you know, maybe Lamb is just, like, not ready, which I don't think is probably likely. But
– Well, the case for Amari is that he runs hot.
Right, and he makes big plays. Like, he makes
a lot of plays. Like, and he doesn't get hurt. He doesn't bang his knee against the turf. He doesn't bruise his heel or whatever. Like, he was losing snaps to Tavon Austin last year because he wasn't healthy.
Oof. Yeah, not a great scene.
No.
But yeah, I mean, like, if you get Dak, it's actually really easy to double stack that too, because those guys are kind of all over the map in terms of their price.
Yeah. Are you looking to stack both of your quarterbacks in this?
I would like to, but I'm not sure if I will be able to. It kind of depends. And I don't know who in my league is listening to this, so I don't want to give away too much. But, yeah.
Come on, dude. Come on. You gotta give it all away, bro.
No, I think I think ideally I want to be able to stack. I mean, obviously, I want to be able to stack Mahomes. But that second quarterback, I think, becomes pretty important because those – like Mahomes is going to do Mahomes things, right? But, like, for these other guys, like Goff, Roethlisberger, like
they're gonna have. I mean, Goff, and all of these mid-tier quarterbacks, they're gonna have weeks where they just crush your soul.
100%. But the guys in that group that end up producing really good fantasy value at their price, it probably means that their targets are going to be underpriced also.
Yeah.
So like stacking that second guy, I think, is probably even more important because, you know, if Jared Goff has a top 10 quarterback season, then that means, you know, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods probably did really well. And, you know, same for like Juju or Deontay Johnson with Roethlisberger, maybe like Chris Godwin with Brady, like these guys.
Oh, no, Deontay Johnson's going to go in like the sixth round on average in these. I hope you're ready for that. People love that guy.
I mean, I'm not taking him because I'm pretty comfortable with just taking James Washington, my buddy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think you want to stack. I think no matter who you're kind of going after, you want to stack that second quarterback. But I am kind of targeting like the Brady, Goff, Roethlisberger group. And then, you know, it kind of depends. I mean,
we should talk about some of the guys we are avoiding in this format at quarterback, because I think that's maybe even more important. I am not taking Josh Allen. I think if you're in my league and you're listening to this, you can have Josh Allen. I think he will go two rounds ahead of where he can go. I obviously believe that his rushing is an advantage in this format, because he's going to pick up those rushing first downs that a lot of other quarterbacks are not going to, and rushing touchdowns. But his completion percentage is so bad that he, like, even in good weeks for him, he's still going to tank you. Like, he's going to lose 10 points a week on incompletions and interceptions on average, probably. 10 is really aggressive. If he loses 10, that'll be crazy. But he will have some weeks where he loses more than that, for sure.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's – so, like, in a normal fantasy league, the rushing is what we consider to be, like, the equalizer for the guys who aren't great passers. But, like, in this format, it, like, really prioritizes good passers. So, you know, if you're drafting a Josh Allen kind of quarterback with the assumption that he's going to still see that boost and you're taking him still as, like, a top 8 quarterback or whatever – like that's just not really going to turn out. So I think all the guys who kind of derive a fair amount of points on the ground and aren't I think the guys like Watson and Dak and Russ, like those guys are fine. Russ even probably sees a boost because he's so accurate.
He's going to complete 68% of his passes. And I love the Tyler Lockett stack as well.
For sure. But the guys like Allen, I think you could say probably Cam, although it's kind of up in the air, I guess, where he goes anyway. But like Minshew in like a normal super flex is like a late guy I really like, but the rushing is just like not as valuable probably.
I would take Minshew in this format for sure, where he's going. I would take him with my sixth round pick or whatever.
Man, sixth round.
I know you, but like, You gotta understand that the biggest thing is that, like, if you're winning at QB2 or Superflex rather, like, that's massive, because a lot of, like, just the way it works, like, there are gonna be more quarterbacks owned than there are starting jobs. Like Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Nick Foles, Mitch Trubisky, like all of these guys are going to be owned in this. Like those guys are not sitting out there on the waiver wire. So having a QB2 who's just going to start 16 games, like in and of itself, like that's probably worth the six round value.
That's fair. And then a couple other guys that really drop for me, Drew Lock, like just gets punished by me in this, like just in my projections. Cause he might not be a good quarterback, and like that seems to kind of matter. So I would probably be avoiding him, and I'd probably be avoiding Burrow also, because I think Burrow in like normal scoring has kind of picked up a lot of steam as a trendy sleeper, and I probably agree with that. But again, like you're not really getting the value out of the rushing. Like rookie quarterbacks don't necessarily tend to be the most accurate, and we're not outside of Tyler Boyd. Like I'm not really sure what you make of the weapons right now.
No, I disagree with you on this one for sure. I think Burrow and AJ Green and Tyler Boyd and specifically CJ Uzuma in this format, like I think all of the Bengals other than Joe Mixon should be considered like plus EV targets. Like maybe not priority targets, but definitely plus EV targets. And there's a couple reasons for it. One, I think a rational projection can say Joe Burrow is better than Andy Dalton, or likely could be more efficient than Andy Dalton at an NFL level. Two, Zach Taylor is running this super, super pass-heavy offense. You know, last year, even in neutral game scripts, so when they were within 7 points of the opponent, they were still one of the five pass-heaviest teams in football. And volume is going to be a massive driver of scoring in this. You know, like, I remember there were some weeks last year where the scoring was really similar, where, like, literally 4 for 55 with 2 first downs from your tight end is like, you're like, oh my God, I just got 16 points out of absolutely nothing from my tight end. And you know, that same thing is obviously going to hold true with the wide receivers. And if you're throwing 50 times a game or 48 times a game or whatever, that's going to be a huge driver. Now, maybe Burrow loses some points on incompletions there in terms of median projections, but I also think it clearly raises his ceiling. So I disagree with you on that one. I really like the Bengals in this format.
Okay. I mean, I definitely like Boyd. I just think that, like, while I agree with everything you mentioned, like, everything you said to me is a great reason to take him in, like, a standard Superflex league or a Superflex dynasty. But those complete, like, those pass attempts really only help him if he's completing 2/3 of his passes. And I just don't really think he's going to do that. So, like, if he's attempting a lot of passes and he's not completing them, even if he's scoring fantasy points elsewhere, he's going to feel that incompletion bonus, like, pretty hard, I think.
Yeah. You know, I think that's fair. Are you on board with me that, the Jimmy G, Kittle, Jimmy G, Jalen Hurd, Jimmy G, Brandon Ayuk, like, those are just money in the bank stacks for this?
Yeah, I mean, well, because so, like, here's the thing, right? It's like in any super flex league, but especially the Scott Fishbowl, where, like, people are pretty active on the waiver wire. Like, quarterbacks who have job security, I think you also have to give a bump, right? Like, there's, like, no way that Jimmy Garoppolo is not starting every game that he's healthy. And you can't
sure.
say that about every
and
guy.
And Nick Mullins and CJ Beathard will not be owned. They're not in the category of backup quarterbacks that are likely to be owned.
Exactly. So, like, I think there's kind of those, like, hidden bonuses with Jimmy G. And then, yeah, also, like, the format, I think, just really, really raises his floor. And I don't think that he's that bad. Like, I know, like, he got a lot of bad press because they basically, like, just took the ball out of his hands in the playoffs. But, you know, he had, like, that monster game against the Saints. A couple other big games during the season also. Like, I don't think that, like, he's not producing because he can't. I think, like, the team is just really comfortable with being super balanced and, you know, running a ton in those positive game scripts. So if that changes at all, which it could, you know, they made some changes on defense, then all of a sudden Jimmy G is not, like, a top 20 quarterback. He could be, like, a top 12 quarterback, and that would be huge.
Where for you does the like, elite tight end grouping stop? So, like, I'm going to reach for this guy because I know how important, you know, I know how important tight end scoring is. I think Kelce, Kittle, Ertz, Andrews are inarguable. I think some people would argue Gronk. Some people would argue Waller. Some people would argue Hunter Henry. Like, where for you is these guys are no longer a priority list?
That's an interesting question because I think that the tight ends, because you get, like, the double premium, they're always going to have, like, I think you have to draft with the tight ends kind of in the back of your mind. Because even, like,
I think, I think you should be drafting multiple and hoping that you have a chance to start one of them in the flex.
100%. So, like, I'm still, like, all over that middle group of, like, Gesicki, Fant, Hockenson, like, the breakout group. Because, and I'll add Hooper to that because I think he's been pretty underpriced. Like, that group could absolutely have the leap to the elite tier. I mean, I think Gesicki is the most likely and he's the guy I want the most. But, you know, Hockenson, Fant, like, those guys profile as breakouts. Like, the guys like Gronk to me are just very unattractive because I just don't think that their ceiling is that high. But, like, if these other young players who are talented all of a sudden became priorities in their offense, like, it really would not surprise me. And I think we've kind of already seen it from Hooper. So I like him as well.
Yeah, I think the guys that I would actually really like to be able to get Evan Ingram and Blake Jarwin. You know, if I can get both of those dudes and start them on a weekly basis, I would be feeling pretty fantastic. I would be like, things are going really well, even though, you know, it's going to be based like Dax ADP will be like 110 or whatever. Like there's no way he'll be there in the second round or whatever.
So you think, so you brought up Jarwin. So I think this is kind of interesting. Like how many rounds deep are we going to be in this thing before David Njoku gets traded and all of a sudden is like a smash pick?
That's such an interesting question. You know, just depends because it takes, and generally these take about a week, these slow drafts do. And, I've already made this point on the show, which is that, you know, it's clearly GTO to be in the slower drafts, right?
Oh yeah.
Like absolutely. Not even close. Yeah. And everyone, you know, wants to, Twitter shame people and, you know, in the group DMs be like, oh, you know, we gotta wrap this up. We gotta keep going. But, seeing what good people are doing, you know, seeing what the overall market is like, it's clearly so much better. And I really hope that my division is a slow drafter, to be frank.
Yeah, I mean, I because it's just like you want the rush of making the picks. So obviously, like you're in a little bit of a rush mentally. But if you can withstand that, you're definitely going to be at an edge. I mean, more information is always good. And you know, I think those kinds of players who could get traded and kind of change the game, like you just want to be on the clock when that happens. So,
yeah, I mean, you for sure want to be on the clock when someone gets traded, someone gets cut, someone gets injured, someone tests positive for COVID. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a thing, right? Like, and there are. I don't know. That's just the fun of like a slow draft. Like I kind of wish that the Cam Newton stuff I wish they would have waited, right? I wish they would have waited until Thursday. Cause you know, there would have been someone who panicked and was on the clock at like 5:07 and they're just like, boom, Newton. I got him, bro. We got him.
Lock it up.
Yeah. Which is just always like that. I mean, that's the most fun part of being in a slow draft for sure. All right, so looking at some of these other quarterback ADPs, do you think the Hunter Renfro Derek Carr stack makes sense for this format? It's so disgusting, but I for real think it does.
Ugh. I mean, first of all, imagine not taking Henry Ruggs if you're going to stack somebody with Carr, because I think that Ruggs is actually the guy that unlocks his ceiling. Like maybe Renfro is the guy who is going to get a lot of those like easy incompletions. And like, frankly, he may even not do that because they did add a lot of talent to the position. And I still really kind of believe in Darren Waller, but yeah, let's say he has that role. Like I still feel like Ruggs is the guy that actually brings Carr from, you know, mid-level QB to high-end QB just because he's going to add those downfield throws, like those long plays, touchdowns, things that have really kind of plagued Carr. So I am team Ruggs, but I get kind of where you're going in terms of the Renfro thing. I just don't think he's like a high ceiling player.
I mean, I'm not going to take Renfro, but I am pro Derek Carr in this format because he just is going to complete 65% of his passes and not throw a ton of interceptions. That's just like his whole deal. Like the whole Derek Carr thing is that he keeps you from, you know, throwing multiple pick sixes in a game.
Yeah, I mean, I know this has probably come up on every podcast, but some of the Jameis lines last year are just like outrageous. And you just can't have that.
I mean, Jameis was the 14th highest scorer in all of the Scott Fishbowl while having three games of negative points.
That's insane.
He had over 50 twice, I believe. The way the scoring works. So, you know, that's pretty good. I think these are the two guys I do not want to pay up for that I expect to go in the second and third rounds, which is Matt Ryan and Drew Brees. I think that I will let my league mates have those guys because I am not super interested in them.
Yeah. Explain the Brees thing. Cause that actually confuses me. Like I think I understand Ryan, you know, he's probably just like not really that big of a value, but what's like the rationale behind kind of fading Brees? Because it seems like everyone has him as like a top five or six quarterback in this format.
That he completes like 72% of his passes and you get points for that.
No, but you said you don't. I thought you said he's like the guy you're not interested in.
Because I don't see the reason why people are into him, I is fine, but first of all, I mean, you can't stack him with his number one guy. It's impossible. They'll be too close in ADP. But also, it feels like it kind of leaves his weekly stuff up a little bit more to variance, because there's going to be some weeks where he completes 61% of his passes, right? And sure, yeah. Or like even in like a shootout style game, I don't know. And also he's like he's 40. I don't know. Like I just
the ageism. The ageism.
Yeah, maybe it is a little bit of ageism, and it's hard to translate that mental thinking of like, you know, drafting all these best ball teams and stuff and being like, Breeds is clearly a guy who has no ceiling in these formats, and then go to this format and be like, oh, well, Breeds has loads of ceiling in this format, you know?
All right, well, let me just read off the game logs for you so that you can see the upside, because I think once you hear this, you may change your tune. So 10 games last year, this was his completion percent by week in the 10 games he started and finished. 74%, 79%, 71%, 80%. 77%, 60%, 72.5%, 97%, 71%.
How many points is he scoring in a 97% completion week? Like, it's got to be absurd, right?
It has to be outrageous. I mean, he also had 300 yards and 4 touchdowns in that game.
So that seems good. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I just think that, like, they just bake so many easy completions into that offense between Thomas and Kamara. Like I still don't know who the deep target is that like is gonna see volume that's gonna ruin his completion percentage.
It's finally Traquan, dude. It's Traquan season.
I mean, maybe. What do I know? But I just feel like replacing Ted Ginn with like a much more reliable player in Emmanuel Sanders probably doesn't hurt his completion percentage.
All right, so maybe I need to rethink that one. Okay, a guy I'm into for sure. And it's certainly higher volatility, but is Matt Stafford. I mean, Stafford was playing some of the best football of his career before he got hurt last year. You can stack him really, like, very affordably with Marvin Jones or TJ Hawkinson. Even Danny Amendola is, like, not the worst 19th round pick you could find in this format, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I mean, the only thing that worries me is, like, they're super high ADOT. So, like, you actually really would want You would kind of want Hawkinson to become a bigger part of the offense, just because that would probably stabilize his completion percentage a little more. But yeah, like those guys, price wise, I mean, even Galladay is to me too expensive in terms of the receiver position, but still like overall not that expensive. So you can kind of get whoever you want, I think, to pair with Stafford, and yeah, he's really good. I mean, I have an MVP bet in it on him. Like, I think he actually is very good.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, Jimmy G, Gardner for me. Okay, what about some of the mega value dudes? Like, are there guys going that, you know, that we expect to go like actually late that you like? Like, are you trying? Well, actually, this is maybe more of like a roster construction question. Are you dedicating a roster spot on your team to Marcus Mariota, Nick Foles, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, like those style of guys?
Yeah, so Nick Foles to me is the answer to both your questions, just because I think he's going to start. So him going like super late and then starting probably at least 12 games, but I think he could start week one. I think he's probably going to start week one, honestly. So, you know, you get a full season out of him late. Well, that's like a really good value. I think my more general approach, and part of this is obviously having taken Mahomes, but like, I really would like to just be able to draft two quarterbacks early and like not take another quarterback until the end. Like,
so I'm not on board with that. I think when you take the quarterback in the first round, you are losing a fair amount of points at running back and wide receiver that you have to try and make up with depth. So I actually, because the quarterback won, you know, you're not worried about unless there's injury. And if Mahomes gets hurt, you're losing anyways. It just doesn't matter at that point. I would rather, I think, gamble at second quarterback, knowing I'm likely winning QB1 every week. That's kind of my thought right now.
So if you take, so you took Mahomes and you will probably rather like piece together QB2, like
not even
Bridgewater, Foles, like combo.
Bridgewater and Jimmy G are the guys I would like to get. If you're listening to this and you're in my league, whatever, I don't care.
Gotcha. Yeah, so not like the super late guys, but like tier three in terms of ADP.
Especially tier three in terms of ADP that fit the scoring where they're not going to have these awful games with 42% completion and three interceptions. So like sacrificing some in terms of ceiling, just to get 13, 14 weekly points, basically.
Yeah, I can get behind that. The only thing that I struggle with is that I kind of think like the longer the draft goes, this is just objectively true. Like the variance in terms of where players go obviously increases. So like there could be like a QB run that just happens and like then you're just done. Like you're just dead. Like if you get the quarterbacks early, I kind of think that you're more likely to make up that value later just because those players are still going to get drafted. Whereas like the quarterback.
So are you talking like taking a quarterback in the second round or taking a quarterback in the fourth round? Like in terms of probably taking either. A second one early?
Probably either. It kind of depends. Like, I mean, where I'm at, I don't really think any of the first tier guys are going to make it back to me. So I probably would wait till the fourth. But like, you know, in the fourth, I could be taking Jared Goff or I could be taking like Teddy Bridgewater if my league just like goes nuts. You know what I mean? Like, and then you're just, I think, losing a ton of value because you're taking a quarterback who is a position of need, but not really a position of value, like in terms of the overall scoring over the player who's going to score like just way more points.
So this is the ADP right now. This is super early. We haven't even had a first round completed, but it is McCaffrey, Barkley, Mahomes, Lamar, Elliott, Dak, Kelsey, Kamara, Mike Thomas, Joe Mixon. So seems like maybe Kyler's going to end up being a value because I Dak at number three is fine, but I think that you are totally you're totally like splitting hairs between the two of those guys. Like they should project really similarly. For you, so if Dak has gone as early as the fifth pick, so you know I would feel very comfortable about taking Kyler, you know, pretty much immediately after Dak goes. I think.
Yeah, it's a little. I think they're a little further apart for me, but yeah, I mean he's still I think in the tier one or you know I guess really tier two because I would put the top two guys in their own tier, but yeah I just think the second round is where you're going to see like Kyler, Watson, like all those guys, I think you're probably going to go. And then maybe Breeze, Russ. You know, like if I could get Russ at 201 at 212, like I'm doing that and not even thinking about it. I just don't know if it's going to happen.
Someone in this, by the way, is going to get DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray. They're going to be able to do that. And that's going to be, that's going to be a very sick start.
Very doable stack. I mean, I think that the kind of the research around like receivers transferring teams is been pretty passed around, I think. But, you know, when you're stacking him, you're kind of mitigating some of that risk because you're basically acknowledging that that could happen. But if it doesn't, you're going to turn out really well.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think the biggest, you know, the biggest thing to do is like the way in which you are going to win the Scott Fishbowl is going to be hitting on your zero RB guys, right? Like, like running back breakouts is how it happens, you know? And I think my guy, you know, like the guy who I am branded to, it's gotta be Cam Akers. Cam Akers in like the seventh, eighth round. Like that's what I want to do.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, I think there's going to be some really good zero RB values. I mean, just running back value in general, obviously. Just because there's like that group of running backs, I feel like that go right after that stud group. And, you know, like Chris Carson's in there, James Conner's in there. A little later, it's like Akers and some of the rookies. Like those guys are going, you know, two or three rounds later in this kind of format because there's going to be so many quarterbacks taken. So yeah, I'm pretty pumped, I think, for the kind of like zero RB teams you can make. And, I want to see how far I can kind of push it in this one.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be Danny Carter last year didn't draft a running back until Adrian Peterson in the 11th round. I don't think I have it in me to do that, but I mean, if if things break a certain way now, if, you know, James Conner is there for me in the fourth round or something or whatever, you know, that will, which by the way, I think his ADP might end up on average in the fourth round. And I think that he is definitely a, I think he's definitely a target there, but I might kind of push my luck with running back, because also this has been my move, which is don't use your fab for anything. And then the first starter quality running back who shows up on the waiver wire, just all in, leave none of it left.
Yeah. It's just the best feeling. Honestly, I do it every year in Scott Fishbowl, but there's just nothing better than going 100 on someone. I mean, I did it for Dak the first time I was in this league, and that just like that high will just, I might still be living off of it, honestly.
Yeah. All right, man. Any other last words of wisdom to the drafters out there? Someone accidentally drafted Matt Barkley with their second overall pick instead of Saquon Barkley. So, you know, keep track of that, I guess.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing with this Scott Fishbowl is like just don't be afraid to do stuff. You know, like this is kind of like the lab for me.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter if you lose. It's all about trying to win.
Yeah, you're trying to win. You're trying to spread awareness on the charity. And, you know, I think that if you're playing like just to not lose, like you'll never win. You know, you'll never beat 1,439 other teams by just playing it safe.
Yeah, definitely. All right, everyone, follow Anthony on Twitter at Amixta, and we will be back with more content soon. Maybe a Scott Fishbowl draft review show a little bit later on in the week. So everyone take it easy. Later.